The Fortune of War by Patrick O'Brien. Dramatized for radio by Roger Daines. Episode 1.
How was it, Doctor?
Sure, it was no more than an ordinary interrogation. They feel in their way.
Your dinner.
Oh, Jack. You're the jewel of the world.
And all the wine is yours. I've had barely the heart to drink anything with you away.
I could drain oceans dry and eat the best part of an ox.
Was it the Secret Service?
The Army.
Ah.
No navy, not even the French navy, would tolerate that general seediness of their Rue Saint-Dominique place. How does our escape come along?
I am resisted by the outer stone. Had I only a pair of double sister blocks and a proper holdfast, I could raise the whole prison. I don't suppose you know the proper French for that, Stephen.
A double?
Sister block. Coked.
Jack, I do not even know what it is in English.
Oh. Well, then I shall have to try to draw it. For without a purchase, that stone will never lift. And I dare not use hammers, not even by day. Not even with a workman's noise.
It would be a sad thing were they to pull down the poor old temple before you could enlarge a privy hole.
May I ask, did they...
Much too early for that. I did witness an execution, sure, but... I knew the man.
You are a prisoner of war, Stephen.
As are we both, but the French think that perhaps I am not.
But as a prisoner of war...
There are limits to what may be asked, yes, at least at first. And I am an obliging officer, and so I am willing to please them. I tell them tales. I began with the story of a shipwreck.
Which? There have been so many.
La Flèche did seem to me a good beginning.
Mr. Forrester! Keep your man to the pump!
Keep to the pump! Keep to the pump! I'll have to hide in the first man who stumbles! Get me there!
Stephen! Stephen!
Jack, I must save my books!
You do not go below!
The ship is on fire!
I should say so, yes!
Fire the main topsail!
Who's in the flare of the main topsail? Main topsail, damn you!
It has extraordinary speed and brilliance, does it not?
Well, it has. Stand away!
Must I say farewell to all my books? Again? My specimen!
Easy, easy there! Captain Albrecht, man the blue cutter!
Come along, Stephen!
Extreme, general, incoherent violence. Has ever been that?
Make a lane there!
Make a way for the doctor!
Oh, do not trample me, I pray, for all love.
There you come, Doctor! Handsomely now!
Killick! Make sure you grasp him carefully now!
Clumsy bugger, I just threw begging your pardon.
I'm obliged to you, sir.
Ready oars!
Last trumpet there!
Pull clear ahead, Bondon.
Clear ahead it is, sir!
In the deer's name.
The guns cannot be left to the heat, Stephen. They would go off at random. Perhaps hit the boats.
The Navy even has a practice for aiding a ship to die.
Of course we do. Men. Ships. None of them is immortal.
HMS La Flèche sank at 19 degrees 53 minutes south and 12 degrees 41 minutes west.
Since you say so, Major.
I calculate by Paris, meridian, of course.
Of course.
In the South Atlantic Ocean, Dr. Maturin. Voyaging from Java to Plymouth with you and your Captain Aubrey as passengers aboard. We know perfectly well this, as well as we know who and... what you are.
Well, as to that, sir, I am an officer of His Majesty's Navy who was a prisoner of war.
Not when you were last in Paris. Nor were you then here in the character of an officer, Dr. Maturin. You were therefore not protected by the laws of war.
But now I am, sir. And I am fully prepared to answer any questions within the limits, narrow limits they are, that may be put to an officer and prisoner of war.
I strongly advise you not to compel me to press you to the utmost.
You are very good, sir.
You are required to give an account of your movements. We already know a very great deal. No equivocation will be tolerated. Let us begin when you were the surgeon officer of His Majesty's ship, the Leopard.
Ah, the horrible old Leopard.
The 20th of November, 1812. 0 degrees, 21 minutes south, 105 degrees, 38 minutes east. At 11:30, Leopard under main topsails enter Palar Batang Bay, Dutch East Indies. Moderate sea, westerly monsoon increasing.
Start the salute, Mr. Babington.
Start the salute, sir.
Start the salute! Number one! Fire!
Mr. Weatherby, bring her to the wind and make our number.
Aye, sir.
Number two! Fire!
Captain, prepare to flag, sir, if you please.
Prepare my barge there, Mr. Babington. We're clearly expected.
Give it here back, you toxy Abyssinian author and bastard! Here, give it!
Kenick there, what's in this?
Which it's your scraper, sir. What's your number one scraper? That bleeding wombat's got at it.
Well then, take it away from him, for God's sake.
What else, sir?
You, Kenick, you don't dare?
For fear of tearing the gold lace, sir.
Ah, the gold lace, yes. Well, now, you, sir. You give that hat up directly. Do you hear me there?
You see? That's what he does. The bugger.
Are we now at Palar Batang, just?
Stephen.
I do so long to see a cassowary.
This is coming it pretty high, you know.
What is? Your brute is eating my hat. Well, it'll do him no harm at all. Be not so perturbed.
It's my full-dress uniform, Stephen, for the Admiral.
Ah, there. The salute is frightened. There, there.
Which the laces all a who, and I'll never come to repair this tear, not in time. That brute bugger!
You should keep your hat under your arm. Just so. Nobody will ever know. Aubrey.
Sir?
By God, I am glad to see you. We had quite given you up for dead.
My letters, reports, returns, and statements of condition, sir.
Yeah.
I am truly sorry to have taken such a time in bringing you the Leopard.
The horrible old Leopard, back from the dead.
Indeed, sir.
I sailed in her in 93. Well, she is tolerably clawed about now. What have you been at with her, Aubrey?
Why, sir, we fell in with the Dutch 74.
The Vaxamite?
Just so, sir.
We were threatened with her. Damned nightmare.
It was. Not to be tedious, sir, she ran us to 43 South. A long, long chase.
And I did hear that you sunk her.
A very heavy following sea. We were short-handed. Outgunned. I tried to avoid action, but she kept coming on. Kept coming on. A lucky shot from our stern chasers brought her foremast by the board. She broached to.
Did she? By God.
Went down. All lost.
My God.
Yes, sir.
But well done. Well done indeed.
Sir.
Chloe! Chloe there! Give you joy of it with all my heart, Aubrey. It ain't every day a 50-gun ship sinks a 74. Champagne, Chloe, and cookies. Plenty cookies. We'll drink to your victory, Aubrey.
You're very kind, sir.
Now, what you must do is to get your dunnage ashore as quick as ever you can. The Admiralty did not give you up, long though you were missing. They have given you a castor.
Upon my honour, sir.
Indeed, she is a plum. You have been a long time away, Aubrey. Close your jacket, Chloe. She is my cook, Aubrey, by land. I find she answers very well for country dishes.
Upon my soul, sir.
Here's to you, Aubrey, and to your victory. Now, La Flèche is due from Bombay. She just touches here, the time to pick up my dispatches. You are to fly home on her as quick as an arrow. As quick as an arrow, Aubrey.
Yes, sir.
Flèche is the French for an arrow, Aubrey.
I was not aware, sir.
Ah.
Very good, sir.
Yeah.
Capital, upon my word. Quick as an arrow. Yes, I shall repeat that.
And pass it off as your own, I dare say.
Oh.
Do you know what became of the Leopard?
The sea is a treacherous element, Major. A ship is but a frail conveyance.
Do not play games of words with us, Dr. Maturin.
Fragilis ratis. A mere soldier, howsomever gold his braid, he might not know what it is to be subject to every wind that blows.
Whilst you were at Paolo Batang, what did you see?
I did not see my cassowaries, alas.
What is this?
Are they but timid birds in truth, Major? I conceive they were scared away by the cricket.
The cricket?
Well played, Mr. Babington.
You want to watch the Admiral, sir? He gave me the most devilish twister.
Well played, Lieutenant.
Thank you, sir. And yourself.
9 wickets down, 46 notched up then, Aubrey.
Well, we have high hopes, sir.
You are in a terrible way, Aubrey. Terrible. Where is your 11th man? I must beg your pardon. Sir, for my late appearance.
Here, sir. Allow me to name my particular friend, Dr. Maturin, surgeon of the Leopard.
No ceremony, I beg. Your £100 are practically in my pocket, Aubrey. Yeah. Your servant, Doctor. Shall we begin?
By all means. You must go down to the other end, Doctor.
Ah. Remind me, Jack, the aim is to beat down the opposing wicket, is it not?
Look, just keep your end up.
Well, then I shall. Close in, men! Close in!
And watch for the Admiral's twisters.
And I, who had not my equal with the hurley from Malinhead to Skibreen, or the bat as the English call it.
I did warn you, Dr. Maturin.
I danced out to meet the Admiral's ball, took it as it touched ground, checked its bounce.
I shall not warn you again.
Ran with the ball at the very hollow of my hurley.
Dr. Maturin!
Send for the Provost Marshal!
Silent, they stood amazed. The ball flicked into my hand. I tossed it high.
Doing now?
Stephen!
I regret to say we lost the match.
Change over rowers. Wet your jackets. Pass them to the new men.
You see there.
What?
Never have I seen those birds more than a few hundred miles from land.
Well, that might mean another week. 4, since the flesh burn.
Sir! A sail! Right on the starboard beam!
Sit you down, goddamn lubbers!
Have a care of my right!
Sit down!
His topsail's up, sir!
Bondon, Killick, Rakes, to the starboard gunnel. Ready about!
On deck there! A boat! A boat to larboard!
Back foretopsail! Back foretopsail there!
Ours. Blue Ensign. Ours indeed.
I can see if she is Java, sir.
Yes, by God, Java. I should have known her anywhere.
Java. She's Java, mate.
No, of old. A ripe, plump 38 she is.
Well, she used to be the French Raynor, mate, taking off Madagascar.
Yeah.
They appear to have seen us.
They do.
Thank God. A boat ahoy! What are ye?
Handsomely now.
Tyndall, Stokes, down with man ropes, help them up.
What ship you oars, lads?
Hey, mate, can you get up the side yourself?
Oh, I believe so. Thank you.
Who's going to be next? You, mate. Oh, you look golly. Come on.
Good morning, sir. I am Captain Aubrey, late of Leopard. I should be obliged if my men might be seen to. They are quite knocked up.
Aubrey? By God, so it is.
Your servant, sir.
Lambert, I did not recognize you.
My surgeon will need a boatswain's chair, sir.
Mr. Chads?
Boatswain's chair it is, sir.
We thought you lost a great while since.
We have a corpse with us, too. Have you a parson aboard?
How came you here, Aubrey?
Pray tell me, sir, have you any news of boats from La Flèche?
None, alas. We heard of her loss.
She took fire.
And you have been drifting since?
She blew up. Vast crimson. And timbers, masts, spars plunging.
Take my arm. Mr. Chads, have the boat hoisted on deck.
Hoist the boat, aye, sir. Hoist the boat there!
I should see my people aboard.
Broughton, bring brandy for Captain Aubrey. And mince pies.
Mince pies?
Small ones, do you hear me? Only small ones.
Is it Christmas, then? Already?
And a poor Christmas it was, too. Never have I known a gloomier.
We have dispensed with the superstition of Christmas in the New France.
Oh, you have made away with so much in your New France. And so many.
Much we also have of intelligence, Dr. Maturin. Tell me now, when you were surgeon aboard the Java...
Major, you may indeed have much intelligence, but in this you are mistaken. The Java's surgeon was Mr. Fox.
Oh. How do you then explain the fact that the description of Java's surgeon fits you exactly?
A glance at the Navy list will show you Mr. Fox. Hmm.
Yes, 5'6", slight build, black hair, pale eyes, muddly complexion.
Mm-hmm. I cannot be held responsible for any man's description.
Oh, yeah, and the hands somewhat crippled. 3 nails on the right hand torn out. You should not like to lose more, Dr. Maturin.
Is this not the gloomiest vessel you've ever known, Jack?
Oh, Lambert's people are kind.
Oh, none kinder. I've never had so many handkerchiefs in my life. But do you not find the Java's a strangely mum-chance crew?
They're honest enough creatures, I believe.
Oh, come, do you ever find a smile? Ever a single one of your flights of what passes for naval wit?
Well, God help them.
I'd be all for women at sea.
Stephen!
Even at the risk of some of your moral deviation, you execrate, sir. Just to obviate some of the eternal, dogged boredom of cross Cathar pins and grumbling thotics.
I believe you have misapprehended the Java's conversation.
Sure, they speak of nothing but the Navy of the United States.
Well, we are at war with it.
Day after dismal day, the American Navy.
Contemptible, sir. Contemptible. Never fought a single action with any credit. Filthy ships. More like privateers than a real navy.
I seem to remember they had a little war with France.
In 99.
I'm obliged to you, Mr. Chads. Did not their frigate Constellation then take L'Insurgente?
That is true, Doctor, but Constellation carried 24-pounders to the Frenchman's 18s.
And you ignore that the Yankees were engaging with foreigners, not the Royal Navy.
I'm told they now have larger frigates to bring to their task with more and heavier guns.
3 of them are 44s, yes.
Yeah, well, it is all one, sir. They are contemptible, as I have said. Convicts for the most part, and piebald mongrels for the rest. We protected them from the French until, what, 63? And then what do? They bit the hand that fed them. Scoundrels! True man!
Am I mistook in that they have also vanquished one of ours? The Guerriere, was it not?
I wonder if you know anything of their... President, Doctor?
Ah, yes. Most unfortunate choice, Mr. Chats.
Oh, is that, you say?
Without a doubt. No bottom. Weak. Blown from side to side in all winds.
You say so?
I do. For all he may be a tolerable Hebrew scholar, he may have genteel, insinuating manners and a handsome, very handsome wife. But power, sir.
I beg your pardon, Doctor. I was referring to the ship, to the frigate, President.
Oh. Well, as to the ship, I'm qualified to form no opinion at all.
We all burn to have a go at the Americans, Stephen. Henry Lambert is as good a fighting captain as any man afloat. But never was there a more unlucky soul. If he takes a prize, it sinks under him or is retaken again. He has half a dozen boys and an invalid wife back home,
And they have given him Java.
May that be accounted ill fortune?
She's as expensive a command as you could wish. Not to mention this crew.
What is the matter with them?
I doubt that he has more than 100 real seamen aboard. Such a Bartholomew Fair setting those to Gantz.
The disaffected? Mutinous?
No. And it's not fair to judge Lambert for them. Nor his officers.
But we are their guests, after all.
They've had no time to work up gun crews. Were it me...
Even still.
Well, you're right. But Lambert has a very good notion of gunnery. And Chads, his first, is a most scientific officer. Chads dearly loves a gun. I dare say they'll bring the men to it.
Yet when you suggested a real, alive discharge...
Yeah, well, I regret that, Stephen.
Captain Lambert said he'd already been wrapped upon the knuckles for exceeding his allowance.
Yes, well, there's a strict rule. No captain is allowed to fire more shot than a third the number of his guns per month.
You must have infringed that almost every day. Leopard, Lively, Surprise, all guns, both sides, the ocean in an uproar. Yeah,
but that was powder and shot that I'd captured. Or it was bought out of my own pocket. Lambert cannot afford that, Stephen. His men will have to learn by going through the motions.
Make all fast, so. Fail in this and 2 tons of gun will be hurtling about the deck. That will crush more than your feet, Legman.
I sir.
I would have you save Mr. Fox's labour, or Dr. Maturin's.
Good morning to you, Mr. Chance.
What say you, Doctor? Will they not do very well?
Ah, little do I know of gunnery.
Well, they will. Good, sensible, steady men.
It must surely call for a very nice appreciation of distance, of angle, and of direction when both deck and target are in constant motion.
It does, Doctor, indeed. But it is wonderful what use will do. A month or two of such constant practice and they will fire amazingly well at 1,000 yards.
On deck there! Sail fine on the starboard bow!
What is she? Can you see?
Top sail only, sir. A closing of us fast!
She may well be your transport, Doctor. May I suggest you pack up your belongings?
If I hadn't come from stowing the captain's sea bag, you'd have been here still, standing staring at them handkerchiefs and warm weather drawers till the drum called us all to dinner.
Reserve Killick, I'm obliged to you.
Now, you need to show a leg, sir. We'll never get you a decent cabin on that bloody transport without. Mr. Babington and Mr. Byron and all them wicked reefers nipping aboard of her like ferrets, swiping all the decent berths. Christ! Before you go all here...
What have we?
Royals! Water guns! No stunsels! No skyscrapers!
Send the royal yards aloft, Mr. Chads.
Royal yards it is, sir. Royal yards aloft!
Royal yards aloft!
Shall you run down and take a look, sir?
At this distance, the relative size of a ship may easily be mistook. You well know. She might yet prove to be your transport, Aubrey.
But you doubt that?
It is no more than a possibility, of course.
But it may be. We have the enemy under our lee.
Always a fine howdy-do aloft, sir. The old quarter-deck stood a-staring through their spyglasses, which some are saying she's a Portuguese razee. But Bondon, he
what?
Said...
A razee?
Why, a cut-down ship of the line, in course. All the guns behind one line of ports, because the upper deck's gone. Well, surely you know that, sir.
I do so, now.
Howsomever, Bondon's been up at the jacks this last class, and he swears she's their constitution.
The Americans?
Yeah, and Barrett Bondon, he should know her if anybody should. He saw a malt of her in the Med. Went aboard of her, too, when she was a-tickling up the Barbary States.
Give you joy, Dr. Maturin.
Mr. Babington, you have the air of one that is summoning me to the surgeon's cockpit.
In good time, sir. We have an American frigate, and a wonderful chance for revenge.
Wear ship and steady on the larboard tack.
Larboard tack it is, sir!
All hands prepare to wear ship!
All hands, wear ship!
Captain Lambert, may I speak for all my men?
Please.
May I suggest, sir, that you give the Leopards a pair of guns? We are used to working together.
With all my heart, Aubrey. If you would take over the forecastle battery, I should be infinitely obliged.
Sir.
Chance will show you to your guns.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Leopards! Leopards, to me, do you hear me here?
Gentlemen! Gentlemen! 2 of our frigates and a sloop have struck to the Americans and not a one of theirs to us. This must end. This will end. My intention is to go to the plain, straightforward way about it. Nelson, gentlemen. Never mind manoeuvres, always go at them.
Nelson, God bless him.
We shall bear down with all speed and lay the ship alongside her. Hit her hard as we can and board her in the smoke. It's very near time, gentlemen. So I will give you the king and confusion to his enemies.
The king!
Loose your guns!
You are right, Bondon. She is indeed the Constitution.
Which I knew at once, sir. Heavy she is, and well manned.
Out, Tompions!
Let us hope they cannot fire their guns as well as they sail their ship. Eh, Mr. Babington?
They mean to fight, sir.
Well, so do we.
The retractor, Dr. Maturin.
Thief, I nearly had him.
You have more than your fair share of rats aboard, Mr. Fox.
I could not say, sir.
Have you thought to introduce a parcel of weasels at all? We find an island, they answer admirably.
I thought you had no weasels in your country. No more, no serpents.
Well, we do not. The Irish weasels are all stoats. But for rats, they are the devil.
Deserve it too, sir. The buggers!
Point your guns!
Fire as they bear!
At last.
On the roll, boys! On the roll! And fire!
Will you not hold him steady? I can barely cut straight. Cauterize me that and take him down.
This man has gone. Bring me the next, Tyndall.
Right. You'll be all right, mate, now.
Captain Aubrey sends his regards.
Why, Barrett Bondon, what am I to do with you now?
Yeah, it is but a scratch, sir.
Indeed. Here is bread, this skull.
Needles, though.
Sir, is my pigtail all right?
Never you fear for that. How goes it above?
Furious it is, sir. Blasphemy brings bad luck, sir. But Christ alone knows how them jarvers are going to take you to Cousin Jonathan.
Hey, watch your mouth, mate.
You watch your own, mate.
There, hold still, Barrett.
Bursting your own guns with overcharging. I seen you. Two cartridges. Any old bits of metal.
Don't matter.
More.
We'll be boarding in a minute.
And there you're done, Bondon.
Thank you, Doctor.
And my love to the captain. Yeah.
Drink deep, boys.
Hands about ship!
Hands about ship there!
I like not this constant wearing of the ship.
Well, Lambert is matching the enemy's manoeuvres.
Maybe done once too often, sir.
Well, it is the most dangerous movement I have
ever. Dear God! We're going to miss stay!
She's going to break us!
Lie down!
Lie down!
Lie down!
Lie down!
Deeply grieve for Captain Lambert, sir. Did you and Mr. Fox not believe you'd saved him?
We did, Commodore, but he died more of misery than of his wounds, spite of our every effort and the help of Mr. Evans here.
He gave us a good fight. He was a most brave and gallant officer.
He was most keenly sensible of having commanded the third frigate to be taken by our little navy, sir. And when we blew up his ship...
She was in no state for a prize.
He had so hoped to avenge the other defeats.
And your own Captain Aubrey?
Has survived, sir.
And his functions are now much what they should be?
Mr. Evans tells me you nearly despaired of Aubrey's life.
Well, we did. I may tell you faithfully, sir, that had he been in command of Java, your victory would have killed him too. But
But now, why he can defecate with ease. He's had a shocking, shocking blow.
Yeah, well, will he be well enough to be moved before we sail for Boston, Mr. Evans?
No, I think not, sir. Despite my colleague's optimism, he is very weak. And I fear there is a look of gangrene still about the arm.
You will continue with Aubrey, Dr. Maturin? You will sail with us?
With your permission, Commodore Bainbridge?
You could still give us your parole, not to serve against the United States. Go straight home in the cartel ships to England.
I am sensible of it, sir, but my patient and friend...
Just so. You have had nothing lost, Dr. Maturin.
I am gratified, Commodore, to acknowledge your extreme solicitude that nothing of Java's unfortunate officers should have been lost or looted.
It is the least of courtesies. But we are curious, Dr. Maturin. You did not claim this book until after we had arrived in San Salvador.
The doctor thought it might be mislaid, perhaps.
I am obliged to ask you whether it has anything to do with the Java's cipher or signals.
I collect Mr. Chads, Java's first lieutenant, threw them overboard, sir, just after he'd hauled down our colors.
Oh, it's this book, Dr. Maturin.
Oh, it is of a purely personal, medical, and philosophic nature.
These enclosed papers
have nothing to do with me. May I?
Yeah.
I believe Captain Aubrey's steward brought them aboard. This looks very like Aubrey's commission. Now, here, Mr. Evans, you may see. Yes, the alimentary tract of the sea elephant.
May I ask why the text appears to be disguised?
Flayed hand here of a sufferer from calcification of the palma alpa neurosis.
It's fascinating. May I...
It does appear very like a code, Dr. Maturin.
Sir, a personal diary is best considered as a mirror in which man may see himself. Few would wish to reveal their innermost shortcomings to another reader. Oviducts of the whalebird.
Extraordinary.
A medical diary, too, must also, perforce, be secret. Mr. Evans will support me.
Total discretion is part of the Hippocratic Oath. Indeed, sir, indeed.
And then it is notorious that the natural philosopher is extremely jealous of his discoveries. He would no more share the glory of a newfound species than a naval commander would wish to share his capture of a ship.
You will not take it amiss, dear doctor, if I point out that your priest king is on the wrong square.
Ah, so he is too.
Monsieur Evans, may I beg a moment?
Ponte cane. I name Dr. Maturin.
The servant, sir.
Good afternoon, sir.
And Monsieur Ponte cane is taking passage with us from San Salvador to Boston.
Ah, le jeu d'échec. Oh, my dear Dr. Maturin.
I've moved.
Yes. Whatever I do, I must lose a piece, it seems. So?
No, that is the wrong...
Hush!
You should have taken the fool. That is what you should have done.
That may be, sir.
It is, without any doubt.
But against a player of Mr. Evans' strength and practice, I fear I should contrive to lose in any case.
Oh. Against me also, for I do love this game. It is agreeable to my sentiments.
And to mine. As a citizen of a republic, since it always ends in the discomfiture of a king.
I, too, was a republican in the frothy pride of my youth. But I have, with age, come to think that, after all, a monarchy is best.
But not an emperor, Dr. Maturin?
Certainly not a tyrant, Monsieur Ponte cane.
Sophie.
His wife. And his first ship.
Laugh and touch her. No.
Now I know what Jack Aubrey will look like when he's 65. Sick, grey, and weak as he is.
Oh, he has suffered much. But you saved his arm.
I resisted the temptation to cut.
And you were right.
A very great temptation that it was. But then I allowed him to stay too much on deck. Perpetually in the wind. Chilled. Through and through in the searching hope of a British man of war.
No, I will not do it, will not!
I collect. There is likely to be a long delay over the discharge of our patient. Commodore Bainbridge has been told that the proper authorities in Boston must make their decision.
Is it the Leopard?
As I believe it, may have something to do with the Leopard.
Captain Aubrey had nothing to do with that disgraceful affair.
Nevertheless, he may not expect much sympathy, being known to have commanded that unhappy ship.
No. Leave your hand there.
At the time, the Chesapeake was brought to.
In peacetime.
In peacetime, yes. Mm-hmm. And the Leopard fired upon her and killed and wounded a score of Americans.
That
yes.
stands for all we hate in the Royal Navy.
And was under the command of another man.
Quick as an arrow.
At that time, Aubrey was 5,000 miles away.
That was not the affair I meant, Maturin. No. It seems that when he was in command of that wretched vessel...
Well, and what then?
You will forgive me. I have only heard rumors. And someone somewhere seems to have taken exception to some conduct of Captain Aubrey's...
Some misunderstanding, no doubt.
Well, but he is likely to be detained until the matter is cleared up. Now, if I may make a suggestion, my brother-in-law has a small... private establishment in a dry, healthy location near Boston Hill.
Is he also a medical man?
He is, sir. His terms are very moderate. They are, in truth, obliged to be very moderate.
What could be more eligible?
Well, sir, now I put this fairly before you. It is commonly in Boston called Otis P. Choate's Madhouse.
My dear Sophie, you know so well I always wanted to imitate Nelson as much as ever I can. Except in the marital line, of course. Ha ha. So here I am, dashing away to you with my left hand and writing much the same scrawl as Nelson did. But Dr. Choate tells me I may try the right in a month or so. My exchange seems to be hanging fire. I cannot tell why, but I dare say it will come as soon as I'm fit to travel, which, my darling, will be in a week or two at the prodigious rate I am gaining strength and weight, for I am fed like the Emperor of Mexico, who looks in on me every day in the most free and easy way you can imagine. So I see many of Dr. Choate's patients who are somewhat contrary in their wits. We all humour each other, each playing at being madder than the next. Come in.
My name is Jehiel Branton, sir. I am of the Navy Department.
Oh-ho! Well, then good afternoon to you, sir. My name is John Aubrey. I'm grandson to the Pope of Rome.
I was not aware that the Romanists were yet allowed to be officers in your service, sir.
Well, I tell you, Captain, though it don't do to let this generally be known, but half the Board of Admiralty is made up of Jesuits. Pray take a seat. How is your brother Ned?
I have no brother, sir, nor am I a captain. I am come here to ask you some questions about the Leopard.
Well, ask on, old boy. All I know is she can't change her spots. And that is in the Bible.
It is alleged, sir, that on or about the 25th March last year, when you were in command of His Britannic Majesty's ship Leopard...
What about the Tiger?
The Leopard, sir.
I could tell you any number of tales about the Tiger.
The Leopard, under your command, fired upon the American brig Alice B. Sawyer. What have you to say to that, sir?
I confess all, Mr. Brenton. I shifted backstays. I slept out of my ship. Kept false musters.
Sir, that is not
I allowed stove casks to be thrown overboard.
The Alice B. Sawyer. Sir.
And I blasted Alice B. Sawyer from the water with both my broadsides. Treble shot.
Sir,
I throw myself upon the mercy of this honorable court.
Do you recognize these papers, sir?
Of course I do. This is my commission. These are victualling notes. Some private letters for carrying to England.
And this?
It appears to belong to my good friend, Dr. Maturin. I shall give it to him when
so
I next...
Not so precipitately, Captain Aubrey, if you please.
And now good afternoon to you, Jehiel Brenton, whom I know well to be a distinguished post-captain in His Majesty's name.
I have many questions
Well, the
for
door
you.
Is
yes,
there,
sir.
Damn me, but you're a dreary lunatic.
A lunatic, sir?
Not a patch on the Emperor of Mexico.
Emperor of Mexico?
And my personal friend, sir. You play but a dreary game, and I am tired of it. Mrs. Patterson will show you out.
Beware of her, sir. She is a werewolf.
I should say he was in temper, sir.
But he was lucid.
He has made a recovery remarkable, I may say, Mr. Johnson. The Captain Aubrey was in the most poor health on board of the Constitution.
Was it there you met him, Ponce Canet, in your official capacity?
He was too ill at that time, a pneumonia. I did, however, make the acquaintance of Dr. Stephen Maturin.
Oh, yes, Maturin.
He is of interest to both our intelligence services, I think.
We shall come to him presently. What did Aubrey have to tell us, Brandon?
He acknowledged his name, stated that he is a Roman Catholic, and made similar allegations about the British Board of Admiralty.
Well, it barely seems likely. Was he playing with you?
He did seem much in drink. But he admitted that when in command of the Leopard, he fired both broadsides into our brig Alice B. Sawyer.
Both broadsides?
That is what Aubrey said, sir.
Well, that is enough to justify our keeping of him. Did he recognize the papers?
He did.
What are these papers, Johnson?
Oh, you shall see them. You know, copies of them in due course.
He claimed them for victualling notes. The sealed packages as private letters he was carrying to England.
You should know better. Private, indeed.
And the book?
He knew it for Maturin's diary.
Are we coming to break the enciphered passages here?
The Dr. Maturin did speak of these to your Commodore Bainbridge and his Surgeon Evans.
Yes, and the reasons he gave for enciphering do appear to be justified.
Appear to be?
There is more here than a single cipher, is there not?
We think three or four, sir, yes.
We'll discover them. Brandon, you will go back to the asylum. Make Aubrey explain these notes and letters.
Sure.
And Maturin?
I will see him myself. He has very particular reason not to refuse any invitation of mine.
Oh, I do beg your pardon, friend. I did not see you.
It is a common hazard in your streets, I find. Could you perhaps tell me the way to Franchin's Hotel?
Friend, it is there.
Ah, an elegant building, so it is.
That is the house of the Whore of Babylon.
Well, the whore seems to do herself pretty well.
Thou art neither so young nor so foolish as to enter into it.
I have a rendezvous there, Joseph. Have you been within, sir?
I should not be welcome, even were I to desire entry, burdened as I am with my skin. Oh,
extraordinary foolish prejudice.
If thou dost enter, friend, mind thy poke.
Ah, my poke is empty. I can be robbed by no man.
Art in earnest, friend? Here.
No. Please, my dear sir. He that is down need fear no fall. He that is low, no pride.
Stephen! Stephen, how glad I am to see you at last. Polly, you will hurry down and bring up the best pot of coffee that Madame Franchon can make. Stephen. Oh, and some cream, Polly.
Magnificent creature.
Yes. Johnson has dozens like her. He breeds a house lace for size. I was so afraid you might not come. I waited in all morning, had everyone denied. Stephen. Did you not get my note?
No note.
You look quite pale. Sit down. Sit down. The coffee will be here directly. How are you? And how is poor Aubrey?
Was the note discreet, Villiers?
It's just compliments. And begged that you would call. For whom are you come, then?
Johnson.
He summoned you.
Listen, my dear, for he will be with us in a minute. What does he know about us?
Well, nothing, Stephen. What is there that he should know?
Nothing.
You and I are old acquaintances. Practically childhood friends. Oh, Stephen, how glad I am to see you. And to see a British uniform. To hear a British voice.
A uniform? A voice?
Oh, you, Stephen, you. I am sorry.
Well, we are all subject to the fortune of war.
Dr. Maturin.
Mr. Johnson, how do you do?
Oh, I'm exceedingly happy to meet you, sir. And I believe you have been acquainted with my friend Mrs. Villiers here since she was a girl.
A little more, certainly.
As you still are, my dear. And Even more than all this, Doctor, it is to you that we are indebted for the most splendid monography on boobies.
Oh, you are too kind, sir. Too indulgent by far. If merit there be, it lies in circumstances, not in myself. In the matter of boobies, I have been more fortunate than most men. But I was marooned on a tropical island during the height of their breeding.
Oh, alas, we are very poor in boobies.
Oh, put them on the side, Polly.
I had the great good fortune to secure one of the blue-face variety when I was off the dry Tortegas.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Maturin will take cream.
But the white-bellied booby, oh, I have never seen. Oh, God damn you, bitch. Well, where would the china makers be if no cups were ever broke, eh? Go on, go. We'll deal with you later.
I beg you, be not agitated, Captain Aubrey.
Oh, I do assure you, Mr. Benson.
I regret there may have been some misunderstanding at my last visit.
None at all.
In any case, this afternoon has nothing to do with the Alice B. Sawyer.
Gratified, I'm sure.
No, no. My office is required to investigate all documents found of prisoners of war before any exchange can be contemplated.
Make it so, then, Mr. Brenton.
This, for example.
Victualling notes, as I've said. Compiled according to a system of my own devising.
Captain Aubrey, sir, do you expect me to believe that the leopard consumed in a year 1,085,266 pounds of meat and 1,167,000...
Who is talking about leopard? And what the devil do you mean, sir, with your do you expect me to believe? Gunfire.
Thunder, I conceive. We will leave the victualling notes for the present. Do you have anything to say to this?
Do you mean to tell me, sir, that you have broken the seal of a private letter?
A letter, sir, from an admiral in an enemy navy. May I ask what you may conceive to be the significance of Kiki Wiki?
You read what was clearly addressed to this lady and no other.
My department has wide powers.
God is my salvation, sir.
Unlimited authority.
Some miserable, scrub-faced swab of a civilian.
My own importance within the Navy Department allows me considerable powers of coercion.
You are to leave the room, sir.
Badgering with documents from the year one.
Your pulse, Jack.
I shall not leave the room.
You're doing my patient serious harm, sir.
I shall not move a step until I have back that document.
This is a private letter.
Hand it back on this instant, sir.
I cannot have my patient worried like this. Go, sir, now, or I will have you put out.
You have not heard the last of this.
Let us now talk of Madame Villiers,
Major. I will not speak of a lady.
She is your mistress.
She is her own mistress and no other.
In Boston, Massachusetts, she was a mistress of Mr. Henry Johnson.
It goes to my heart, Stephen, straight to my heart, to see English officers, you, walking about prisoners of war, and the Americans do so crow.
And you were citizen of their country.
The silliest thing I ever did in my life. And now Johnson expects me to be pleased when Royal Navy ships are taken.
Do you say that is an egregious effrontery in him?
For a very clever man, he can be unbelievably stupid. He thinks of himself as Adonis and Byron and Croesus all rolled into one, and no woman can resist him.
But you?
How can I get out, Stephen?
Go?
I cannot.
He has something else over you?
He can be perfectly ruthless.
You're afraid of him.
I ran with him from London. I was taken to the Home Office and questioned for hours on end. Implicated. Afraid I should be taken up and hanged. I never imagined that what he did there was directed in any way against England.
So his work is important?
I thought he was just a too-rich man fooling about. A dilettante. But not at all. He has a whole swarm of people working under him. Advises the Secretary of State.
Perhaps he has been generous to you also?
Most women like diamonds. But even the slaves look at me as if I too have been bought. I cannot bear it. And then he is absurdly jealous. None of his black women is ever allowed to marry.
None?
Oh, the fellow is a perfect parish bull. I am desperate, Stephen.
You must marry me, Villiers. That'll make you a British subject again. You can return to England when Jack and I are exchanged. Be my wife.
I knew I could always rely upon you. But there will be no exchange, Stephen.
I assure you, before the week is out.
No, no. They believe Aubrey has something to do with intelligence.
Aubrey? My dear.
Well, God knows if they're right. I no longer know what to believe about anybody, save you, Stephen. If they are right, God help Jack Aubrey in Johnson's hands.
Come in.
Captain Aubrey. Good afternoon to you, sir. My name is Johnson, Henry Johnson.
We got along very well together, Dr. Maturin. He spoke handsomely of you.
Captain Aubrey is very kind.
Well, he is the complete British Sea officer. The kind that taught our men their trade.
And they've learned it well.
I did not like to linger. Aubrey has been so shockingly knocked about, he seems fatigued.
The loss of 3 frigates without a single victory?
Just so. Your opinion?
I only hope that all this useless slaughter and destruction will soon come to an end. Oh.
With all my heart, you are a man of peace, Dr. Maturin. And so am I. And peace would come much sooner, it seems to me, if only there were a clear understanding between us and the States and Europe.
I'm afraid, sir, the advice of a plain naval surgeon would be of little use to you.
You are not quite the plainest of naval surgeons, sir. I know something of your reputation, your scientific activities. I know of your distress at war between the States and the United Kingdom. I know of your, let us say, impatience at the English government's conduct in Ireland. And after all, our ends are essentially the same. Just and lasting peace.
Sir, we are nonetheless technically at war. If my advice could be of the least value to you, then I should be comforting the enemy. In spite of my esteem for you personally, sir, I must beg to be excused.
Dear Dr. Maturin, I will not take your refusal. Ask Monsieur Ponte Canet to come in.
We have it on excellent authority that a man cannot serve 2 masters.
No, but he may serve an end that transcends both. Forgive me a moment. I have to give this to the Frenchman.
Oh, Dr. Maturin, how do you?
I'm well, I thank you. And you, sir?
I do very well.
Here.
Thank you, sir. I wish you then a good day. Doctor?
You would not think so. But that man is the most devilish creature. His people had an agent on the Canadian border who thought it more profitable to be paid by both sides. They brought him down here. The sight of his body afterwards, I do assure you, it haunted me for weeks.
I have myself enjoyed French hospitality.
You are my guest. But in these critical times, we cannot be as rigid with our French colleagues as I would wish. Let us meet tomorrow. There are certain formalities to do with Captain Aubrey's exchange. And when we have dealt with them, I hope you may not object to my consulting you on a few points of purely European politics.
We went along surprisingly well. And Johnson thinks the world of Dr. Maturin.
Does he indeed?
Yes, such handsome things about your birds and your learning, your Latin and Greek. And not to be behindhand, I added your French like a Frenchman as your Spanish and Catalan. Not to mention all those outlandish languages you picked up out east.
Jack. Brother, I am obliged to you for your good opinion, but, my dear, in principle, you might avoid applauding me here to strangers.
Lord Stephen, have I done wrong?
I must tell you this, Jack. The Americans suspect us of being concerned with intelligence.
Ah. Is that why our exchange is so delayed?
It is. Do not, for God's love, give them a handle to grasp upon. This will blow over.
Well, if they suspect me of intelligence, why, I dare say it will soon blow over.
In The Fortune of War by Patrick O'Brien, dramatized for radio by Roger Daines, Captain Jack Aubrey was played by David Robb, Dr. Stephen Maturin by Richard Delane, Diana Villiers, Candida Benson, Preserved Killick, John Glover, Barrett Bondon, Sam Dale, Henry Johnson, Stu and Roger, Ponte Canet, Nick Underwood, Major Jean-Charles Clapier, Stephen Hogan, Jaheel Brenton, Gerard McDermott, Lieutenant William Babington, Don Gillet, Captain Lambert, Sean Murray, and Lieutenant Chads by Liam Lau Fernandez. All other parts were played by the cast. The Fortune of War was a BBC Scotland production, directed by Bruce Young.